Today we're in week two of the very last series that I'll be doing here at Gisborne Church of Christ. It's a series that I'm calling Close. And I guess if you want to sum up the 10 and a half year season of ministry here at the church, I think that you find it in the 5 weeks that we're sitting in at the moment. Now, Close actually stands for something, and if Archer, we could have that first slide up, thank you. There's five different elements to following Jesus that I see that are really, really important. And the five different elements that you can see on the screen, which I'll work through in just a tick, are really very much about, I guess these are the things that I've sought to impart in my time here at Gisborne Church of Christ. And so as that season comes to an end, I guess I just want to sum up. And this is an opportunity to do so. So last Sunday, we looked at how one of the ways in which you can draw close to Jesus is through contributing with generosity. There's something that happens in our hearts as we're sacrificially generous towards others that allows us to be drawn close to Jesus and to encounter Him and experience Him. Today, we're going to be sitting with this idea of living justly. And then next Sunday, we're going to be talking about how one of the ways in which we stay close to Jesus is by being open to growth, being open to the fresh revelation, the new understanding and learning about God, because we never actually know it all. Week four of the series, we'll be exploring the importance of being followers who share our faith in the way we live and in the way we speak. And finally, on the last Sunday, I'll be having a look at empowering others, the importance of releasing and supporting others into their God-given gifting and calling. But today, we're in living justly. And if you want to look back throughout history and over the last 100 years of history, then perhaps one of the most significant figures was Martin Luther King, the civil rights activist who spoke out and spoke against corruption and discrimination and racism in America. And as a result of his speaking out and as a result of his advocacy, he brought about significant change, though there still is much change that still needs to happen, both in his society of America, but also ours. But Martin Luther King was a significant figure in the life of the United States of America. In fact, they have a public holiday which they've named after him. And on the 3rd of April in 1968, he gave a speech. And in that speech, he quoted from the book of Amos. Amos chapter 5, verse 24. "Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." What no one knew at that time is that the very next morning he would get up, he would go out onto his balcony, and he would be killed. The very last speech he gave contained this scripture. Luther King actually loved Amos. There's something about the book of Amos that he must have really connected with and resonated with. And he regularly quoted Amos in his speeches and his sermons. In fact, this passage here in Amos chapter 5, verse 24, was also included in his most famous speech, the "I Have a Dream" speech. Now, Amos was a pretty simple man. He was a farmer, a sheep farmer. He lived not far from Bethlehem, actually. And during his time, Israel had become a very prosperous society. Things were pretty good. But there was a problem. And the problem was that as they grew in economic prosperity and as things got better and better, what was happening, it was that it was only a few were benefiting. And most people were being left behind and left out. And Amos could see this, and he felt God's Spirit speak to him, and so he wrote the words that we find in Amos, speaking out against the injustices that he saw in his society of his day. And as he comes to the close of his writings, he comes to this passage. It's a plead, it's a prayer. It's a cry of the heart. In a time of uncertainty and a time where there were people, many people doing it really tough and great challenges around, he pleads and he cries, let justice roll on like a river. Let righteousness like a never-ending stream. It's little wonder that Luther King could relate so much to Amos. One of the things that I guess I'm so pleased to look back on over the 10.5 year journey at Gisborne Church of Christ has been the way in which we as a church have attempted to live into living justly. Now, it's not easy, and we haven't got it right all the time. But it started right back at the very start of my time at the church. And I'd only been at the church for a month or so, and during the day I was at a meeting in the Churches of Christ Victoria Tasmania head office in Fairfield, and I met Tony and Francine Riches. And I got talking to Tony and Francine, and they shared with me how they just moved from Western Australia and they were going to plant a church amongst Indigenous people in Footscray of Melbourne. And then that night we just happened to have an elders meeting, and so I was talking to the elders at that night about my meeting with Tony and Francine. There was Jill McDonald was there, Dave was there, Brent Adams was there. At Calthorpe Avenue, actually. And during that meeting, we just asked ourselves the question, maybe we should be doing something about this as a church, this issue of injustice amongst our first peoples. Maybe we should be trying to live into that a bit. We didn't even know what it looked like. We had no idea what we were doing, really. But there was just this sense in our hearts that this was something that was right and of God. So I invited Tony and Francine to the church, and they spoke, and we've had them back, and they've spoken regularly here. We've supported them for the last 10.5 years as they've planted a church amongst Indigenous people in Footscray and done an incredible work there. But it's not just that. We've gone to places like Dareton, just north of Mildura, and engaged with Indigenous communities there. We've had all sorts of different conversations. All sorts of different Indigenous people have stood at this platform and shared with us and preached to us. And we've sat and we've learnt. And we recognise that that learning journey must continue. But something's happened in us. As we've attempted to live into justice, into God's justice, we've been drawn closer to Him. But it's not just amongst Indigenous peoples that we've tried to do this. There's been times and seasons where we've looked out for refugees and asylum seekers. There's been many times when there's been food grown in our community garden which has been taken to the northern suburbs of Melbourne where there's asylum seekers and refugees and handed over and helped to feed them. We've had different people come and people that work amongst asylum seekers and refugees and share those stories. We've prayed, we've pleaded, we've advocated to our government at different times for a better treatment of asylum seekers and refugees. I remember very early on, I think I'd only been in the role here for a year or so, and I was preaching on John the Baptist. And it was at the time where there was far northwestern Australia, Christmas Island. And there'd been a major catastrophe. A boat had been rocked up to shore in a great storm, and many asylum seekers and refugees lost their lives as a result. And I remember talking about John the Baptist and how John the Baptist was a man who proclaimed God's justice. Talked about if you've got two coats, you need to take one off and give it to someone that needs it. And I went into some commentary of what was happening at the current day about the lack of welcome that was happening towards asylum seekers and refugees. And I guess you could say my comments were fairly forceful. And I did so being convicted that that was what was necessary and what was needed to be said, but at the same time not sure how people would respond. and somewhat fearful of perhaps backlash or criticism or whatever that might come. But not one person criticized. Not one person pushed back. And we've gone on this journey as a church of embracing justice, trying to live into the future hope that we have where there is justice for all. We've done it in all sorts of different ways: Indigenous people, refugees and asylum seekers, our community garden. I've mentioned that briefly, but in the time that that's been in existence, it's grown food and we've cooked food and fed many people in need. This church has supported the local school chaplain, who is now both school and community chaplain, for much longer than I've been a part of the church, and continues to do so. We've been involved in setting up the food bank, and a member of our church is going to be running the food bank this year. We need to be praying for Lara as she steps into that role. Perhaps even more significant than the programmatic response has been the conversations that have happened. And there's been many, many conversations that I know I've shared and others have shared with different people in this church around what does it look like for us to be living justly in our world today. As I look at what's happened over the last 12 months with the COVID-19 pandemic, and I look at what perhaps is coming at us, I think the need for us as a church, speaking both of Gisborne Church of Christ but also of the church broadly, is that more than ever we need to be living justly in the days ahead. The anticipated and expected economic contraction that was meant to happen when this COVID-19 pandemic started unrolling throughout our nation hasn't happened yet. But I think there is a season that is still coming. A season where there's greater job insecurity. A season where there'll be more and more people in our communities who find themselves in really difficult situations. Perhaps never before, at least in my lifetime, will there be an opportunity like that which is coming towards us to look after, to support, to care for, to reach out to those who find themselves in situations of challenge and difficulty that they never once imagined that they would be. When the early church first started growing, and we've got the stories of it in the book of Acts and in Paul's letters, it's alluded to the growth of the early church. But we only have in Acts the first few decades of the early church. We don't have much more beyond that. But what we do know is that when the church first started in the first century, it was a very small and fairly insignificant in the scheme of things little organization. But over time, it started to grow. And all of a sudden, there were 10,000 Christians. And then 100 years later, there was over 100,000 Christians. And by 300 AD, the number was in the millions. In fact, 10% of the Roman Empire had become Christians by that stage. Now, you've got to understand that this was during a time where, for the most part of that, they didn't have church buildings. For the most part of that, their church services were done in secret. And yet they grew exponentially. More and more people coming to faith as a result. And the question is, what caused that? What was it about the early church that enabled that to happen? A prominent sociologist by the name of Rodney Stark has done a lot of study on this. Now, Stark is a nominal Catholic, I guess you could say. But he wanted to understand what caused the growth of the early church, and he's written a book called The Rise of Christianity. And in that book, he says this quote, if we could go to that. Thanks, Archer. Christianity served as a revitalization movement that arose in response to the misery, chaos, fear, brutality and brutality of life in the urban Greco-Roman world. Christianity revitalized life in Greco-Roman cities by providing new norms and new kinds of social relationships, able to cope with the many urgent problems. To cities filled with homeless and impoverished, Christianity offered charity as well as hope. To cities filled with newcomers and strangers, Christianity offered an immediate basis for attachment. To cities filled with orphans and widows, Christianity provided a new and expanded sense of family. To cities torn by violent ethnic strife, Christianity offered a new basis for social solidarity. And to cities faced with epidemics, fire, and earthquakes, Christianity offered effective nursing services. For what they bought was not simply an urban movement, but a new culture capable of making life in Greco-Roman cities more tolerable. When I read that this week, my heart leapt. Because that's the potential that's coming at us, I believe. If we as a church and if the church broadly can live justly, we have the potential, we have the possibility to be those places of welcome and dignity and hope to those who are doing it tough. I want to offer to you today four ways in which you can live justly. Four ways in which you can embrace this idea of starting to be open to welcome and to care for others. If we could go to that next slide. Thanks, Archer. The first thing we can do is consume wisely. There's two aspects to consuming wisely, actually. The first one is just to consume less. And we need to ask ourselves questions all the time around when we're looking at purchasing things. Is this what I actually need, or is it something that I want and I perhaps don't really need? One of the greatest causes of injustices that are happening in our world today is environmental degradation and the consequences of that. And the very poor are those who suffer most as a result of environmental degradation. And so by consuming less, we're alleviating needs of things like landfill, manufacture of plastics and other materials that cause pollution. Another aspect to consume wisely is to understand the impact of where the money we spend and how that goes. And so our clothes might be really cheap to buy at times, but we need to be aware of what's gone into and who has made them and in what conditions they've made them, for example. So we need to consume wisely. We also need to be sacrificially generous. Now the idea of this message is around how do we grow close to Jesus, and I'm wanting to present the idea that we can grow close to Jesus by living justly, and I think this is one area in which we really do grow close to Jesus when we're able to be sacrificially generous. There's something quite amazing that happens when you identify a person or an organization or a cause that you believe in that is sowing into this area of justice and lifting people up out of poverty. And when you journey with that person or organization or cause for a length of time and you start to see the impact that your support is having, something happens in your heart. I know Kate and I have certainly experienced this with our support of Chris and Jody McCartney, who we've been supporting for the best part of 15 years. Initially, when they went to Springvale to live in Kevin Street, Springvale, amongst the poorest of the poor in Melbourne, and then about 12 years ago when they moved to Bangkok in Thailand. And there's been this beautiful response that's happened through their work. as they've come alongside their neighbours in Klong Toei in Bangkok. And the solution that's been come up is not a solution that Chris and Jody initially envisaged. This is something that's come up from the community, the idea of second chance. And the support of many, many people and many churches has enabled Second Chance to be planted and then to grow and to flourish to the point where Chris and Jody have now returned to Melbourne and have set up a house permanently in Melbourne. But Second Chance continues, being run entirely by Thai people from the Klong Toei slum of Bangkok. Now, I just want to share briefly a couple of little stories. And I guess this is the fact that I'm getting emotional about it is a sense of the great blessing that it is to me and to Kate as we've been journeying with Chris and Jody and Second Chance for these last dozen years or so. And the stories of two different people, both who are currently working as managers at Second Chance. Now, one of them was actually Chris and Jody's neighbour. She was a little 13-year-old girl when they first moved into Klong Toei, and she was their neighbour. And so they grew up next door to each other, and then eventually she came and worked for them. She became the only member of her family to have ever completed university. As a result of completing university, she was able to get a job out in the workforce outside of Second Chance. That enabled her to get a home loan, and she's been able to purchase a home for her family. And the dream that has sat there for generations, that one day we will get out of this situation that we're living in, has now come to fruition. Now, not long ago, once all that had happened, she's come back and she's now working as a manager at Second Chance. She had to leave Second Chance because they wouldn't have given her a loan if she didn't have what they considered a proper job, but that's a whole other story. But now she's back, paying off the house, putting her family under a roof that's comfortable and secure and safe, and she's doing a great job working there at Second Chance. The other person is also a manager at Second Chance. Single mum, couple of young kids, parents that live with her as well. And as a result of the employment that she's had in Second Chance, she's been able to keep her young kids going and her parents going, elderly parents going as well. And she's had the opportunity, because of the greater income, if she wanted to, she could actually leave the slum of Klong Toei. She could either purchase or get out or rent a house elsewhere if she wanted to. But she's made a conscious decision to stay, because she sees her neighbours and the connections that she has with them, and she's so heavily invested that she wants to continue to reach them, to minister to them, to care for them. And so she's made the decision to stay. And both are amazing stories. Both are major wins, actually. Neither are wrong. They're both right. But they're just so amazing when you consider a decade or more support that not just Kate and I have done, but many, many others and many, many churches. And we see these incredible results. Two stories that are being replicated over and over and again, and that will continue. We need to focus on personal relationships. This is really important. Up until this point in time, I've spoken mainly about programmatic responses or structured responses to issues of justice and giving generously to them. And that's all well and good, and that's really important. And I don't want you to not do that, but I also don't want you to leave it there. Because we're not really living justly until we're able to come alongside people who are doing it tough, whether they live in our neighbourhood or whether they live beyond our neighbourhood, but actually coming alongside and building relationships of mutual respect and understanding, not a top-down relationship, but a coming alongside relationship that we're really able to live justly. And I see too often in the church, speaking broadly, that people will go, yeah, I can do number one here and I can do number two, but they stop before they get to number three and they don't take that next step. And I actually think this is the most important step, to be able to come alongside at that level and come up with solutions together. Finally, we've got to partner with Jesus. We've got to partner with Jesus. One of the dangers about going down the path of wanting to live justly and to pursue God's justice is that it can become the sole focus. And again, there's a danger here where if we want to advocate for justice and we want to live justly, we want to talk about justice and all of that sort of stuff, there's this danger that happens that we actually take Jesus out of the picture a little bit. And the program or the structural response even can become at times a bit of an idol. And it takes us away from God, not drawing us to Him. So one of the things that we've often talked about at Gisborne Church of Christ is the need to partner with Jesus, to understand where He is at work already around us in our world today. And then our role is to come alongside that. And maybe there's just a little spark of where God might be at work, but we can come alongside that and start fanning that into something much bigger and it can become a flame. But we do need to be conscious that we're partnering with Jesus. Let justice roll like a river. Righteousness like a never-ending stream.